Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam 11th Canto, Chapter 19, The Perfection of Spiritual Knowledge, Text 25.
Yadatmanyarpitam chittam. Shantam Satvo Brabringhitam. Dharmam Gyanam Savairagyam. Aishvaryam Chabipajyate. Yadatmanyarpitam Chitkam. Shantam Satvo Brabringhitam. Dharmam Gyanam Savairagyam. Aishvaryam Chabipajyate. Yadatmanyarpitam Chittam. Shantam Satvo Prabrimhitam. Dharmam Gyanam Savairagyam. Aishvaryam Chabipajyate. Yada, when Atmani, in the Supreme Lord, Arpitam, fixed, Chittam, consciousness, Shantam, peaceful, Sattva, by the mode of goodness, Upabrimhitam, strengthened, Dharmam, religiosity, Gyanam, knowledge. Sa-hi. Vairagyam. Detachment. Aishvaryam. Opulence. Cha. Also. Abhipajyate. Achieves. Translation. When one's peaceful consciousness, strengthened by the mode of goodness, is fixed on the personality of Godhead, one achieves religiosity, knowledge, detachment, and opulence. Purport. A pure devotee becomes peaceful, shanta, by desiring everything for the service of the Lord and nothing for himself. He is strengthened by the transcendental or purified mode of goodness, and thus he achieves the supreme religious principle of directly serving the Lord. He also achieves jnana, or knowledge of the Lord's form, and his own spiritual body. Detachment from material piety and sin, and the opulences of the spiritual world. One who is not a pure devotee of the Lord, however, but whose devotion is mixed with a fascination for mystic knowledge, is strengthened by the material mode of goodness. Through his meditation on the Lord, he achieves the lesser results of Dharma in the mode of goodness. Dharma, piety in the mode of goodness. Jnana, knowledge of spirit and matter, and vairagya, detachment from the lower modes of nature. Ultimately, one should be a pure devotee of the Lord, since even the best the material world has to offer is most insignificant compared to the kingdom of God. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. What do we think about this statement? that even the best the material world has to offer is most insignificant compared to the realm of bhakti. What do you think about that? Even the best. Think about what is the best thing the material world can offer? It can't offer anything that lasts. It can't offer anything of substance. The material world means based on matter and dedication to matter. The Sanskrit word for matter is dvitiya, the second. It's secondary. There's the light and there's the shadow. So what is the best that a shadow can offer? Who likes shadows? Criminals and dangerous elements, they like shadows. So who would like the material world? Only shadowy characters. Shadowy people. So somehow or other, we have reversed reality, and we relish the shadows, and we're afraid of the light. Like criminals and ghosts and other strange entities. We're afraid of illumination. Or just a little bit of illumination will do us. Not too much. We don't want the sun to come out completely. Because if there's complete illumination, if there's complete enlightenment, we'll realize that everything belongs to Krishna. No. Nothing belongs to us. Horrible. How will we be able to lust if everything belongs to Krishna? So, just a little bit of light. A little small miniature torch. Not one of those new lead torches, they're too bright. But just an old-fashioned torch, right? That's enough. We don't want a floodlight. We don't want full illumination. We want to have opportunity to pursue our own agenda, to be happy in this world. Why do we want to be happy in this world? Because it offers something, yes. There must be something in this world, otherwise why are we here? There must be something for us. But just think, analyze what actually is in material existence for you. That's why the Shastra again and again makes the point. In terms of bodily gratification, you'll never get anything different than what the animals are getting. You'll never get anything different. But the human beings are persistent. We shall find some unique flavor. It's not there. Prahlad Maharaj speaks about this very clearly in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam. Sukham angriyakam daityam deha yogena devinam sarvacha labhyate daiva yata dukam ayatnataha. The happiness perceived of the body in terms of the connection between the senses and the sense objects can be obtained in any species of life. This is an embarrassing thought. If you think about it deeply, it causes a total renovation of your lifestyle. It happened to me, I know. Those are among the first lines I read of Srila Prabhupada's books, a small pamphlet called The Transcendental Teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. And I read, after a couple of pages, this point came up. Sukham indriyakam daitya. The sukha, the happiness perceived in relation between the senses and the sense objects, can be had in any species of life. It's not that the humans get a special rasa, special flavor. I was shocked when I read this. I was devastated. I actually just collapsed on the couch while reading it. Think about it. What is the best that the material world has to offer you? Does it offer security? How many of you expect security in material existence? You may get a flickering security for a short period of time, but then death kicks you out. But what is the power of Maya? We say, I don't mind if death kicks me out as long as I have 60 years of security, right? That's all right. I'll be satisfied. Do you really think it happens at the time of death? You say, okay, I've had my fill. No. You may say that because your body is so miserable and painful, but still the material desires are hoping for their fulfillment, and those material desires carry you to your next body. So think about it. What is the best that material existence has to offer you? Knowledge? What kind of knowledge does the material world have to offer you? Those of you who have been to university, you know it's generally about just pleasing the professor, getting the grades so that you can, you know, have the credits to show for getting a good job. And then when you get the good job, you please the boss so that you hope you can get a better job. On and on it goes. In this way, the conditioned soul is just running here and there. Who can I please? Who can I please? Because the basic situation of material existence is insecurity. Once you realize that, you'll really penetrate the illusion. You'll penetrate the veil. You can't be secure in material existence because the very essence of material existence is insecurity. That's why in the third canto, Devahuti was imploring her husband, "All right, you're about to leave home. You've given me 9 daughters, but please, you haven't given me the ultimate gift, which is fearlessness." Fear, insecurity, that is an essential part of material existence. You can't rub it out. You can't erase it unless you erase material existence. And who wants to do that completely? Our understanding of Dharma is that the Lord should help us to have a happy, secure material life. Now, it is true that if you have such foolish desires, best to approach the Supreme Lord about it. He knows how to arrange a program of rectification. So therefore, the Shastra says, Chikadeva Goswami says in the second canto, Akama Sarva Kama Va Moksha Kama Udharadi. Whether you are free from all material desires, full of material desires, or you're lusty for liberation, you want to escape material existence, never mind, engage in devotional service. Because once you engage in devotional service, Krishna knows how to renovate your internal situation. As the devotee becomes more and more dear to Krishna by the rendering of devotional service, Krishna makes sure that the devotee doesn't have his or her desires fulfilled in a way that's injurious to their bhakti. And gradually, Krishna arranges that the devotee sees, what was the use of those desires I had? They were foolish. Just like Dhruva Maharaj. Swamin katata smivaram niyaje. What a fool I was. I was searching after broken pieces of glass, ignorant of the greatest jewel of pure bhakti. That realization was the conclusion of following the instructions of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. In the beginning, Dhruva wasn't like that. His motivation was to get a kingdom better than anyone in his family line. He was so enraged that he had been insulted, minimized by his father and his stepmother, his father's other wife. He followed the instructions of Narada Muni, and the end result was, what am I doing desiring such foolish things? That's the nature of the process of bhakti when you follow it properly. Krishna knows how to take care of his devotees. Taking care of the devotees doesn't mean simply that you'll live in a palace. It means your desires will be taken care of. You will be protected from your foolish desires. Just like a child is protected by the parents from acting foolishly. Children want so many silly things, right? Toys, right? You're still in the toy phase? What is your favorite store? Toys R Us? They have that in Melbourne, Toys R Us? Yeah, that's your favorite shop, huh? So, It's expected that children will have these desires, but we also expect that he'll grow up. Similarly, we expect that devotees will grow up. And Krishna knows how to arrange for that process of maturation. When you start to become a mature devotee, you realize even the best that the material world can offer can't slightly compare to the opulences of bhakti. When you start understanding that, you become very comfortable in your spiritual life. Otherwise, it's like a child who has to listen to his parents, even though he really would not like to. His parents say, no, no, you can't have this, you can't have that. And the child, all right. I'll chant Hare Krishna. I'll get up in the morning. I'll do devotional service. I'll make my home Krishna conscious. All right. I'll come see the deities. All right. It's like that for a while. But because the child, if the child has wise parents, you have wise parents? Right. If the child has wise parents, then the child will reap the benefit of following the parents' instructions. The child will realize, they were right, I was foolish. I remember when I was a teenager, my mother, she wouldn't let her sons hang out with the boys in the neighborhood. Oh, they're going nowhere. But my brothers and I, you know, we were young teenagers, but they look like they're having so much fun, parties, and they look so spontaneous and happy, playing basketball all day. So, you will never go near a basketball court. So just wait a few years, you'll see how they lament. They've been wasting time not studying in school. Just see when it's time to go to university, how they'll be crying. So he said, all right, mother, all right. We'll miss out on all the fun. We'll study. So it seemed like it would be eternity that we have to deprive ourselves. It seemed like eternity. Meanwhile, all the boys in the neighborhood are enjoying partying, sports, just making mischief. They would make fun of us. What did your mother tell you today? Mama's boys. We're going to be doing some good fun tonight, and you can't be in on it. So, we wanted to be foolish, but out of love and respect for the parents, we listened. All right, we have to do what mother says. And then, sure enough, when we finished high school, when we were 16 or 17, and mother, she was standing tall, telling all the ladies in the neighborhood, oh, just see. You let your boys run wild. Now they have no good educational possibilities. My boys are going to the top schools. You see, I told you so. You know, ladies can rub it into other ladies when they want. My son is going to Yale. Where is your son going? Oh, the local TAFE. That's all right. Yeah, the version of the tape. Yeah. That's okay. It's something, you know? So we are like children in bhakti. We have so many foolish desires. Oh, Krishna, you have to do this for me. Oh, Krishna, you have to do that. I need this, I need that, otherwise I can't be Krishna conscious. It's like a little child. I must have this toy. Otherwise I fall apart internally unless I have this toy. So we are like that. Dhruva Maharaj said that was his life. Performing the process of bhakti as Narada Muni gave him just for the purpose of getting the greater kingdom than anyone in his family line. And his family line, who did it have? Uttanapad, Brahma. And Dhruva wanted a greater kingdom than anyone. But after following the instructions of Narada Muni very carefully, He understood. Swamin katato svipanam nayache. I'm such a fool. I'm just satisfied with devotional service in the association of pure devotees. That's all I want. What causes the problem in material existence? Our consciousness becomes agitated by contact with the modes of material nature. Particularly, the mind becomes contaminated. The contaminated mind causes so many hallucinations. Therefore, dealing with our mind means being firmly immersed in the bhakti process. Otherwise, your mind never gives you peace. Do you think it's the purpose of the material mind to give you peace and security? Whoever taught you that? Whoever told you that? Well, people who listen to their mind, yes, their mind tells them that. Just set me free and do what I say. You'll be peaceful. You'll be happy. It has never happened. It will never happen in the future. So there needs to be a process for cleansing that mind. And what can be a more effective process for cleansing the mind than putting the mind in association with Krishna? So the bhakti process means let the Krishna sun rise in your mind and it'll dissipate the fog of illusion. So what is our daily endeavor? Our daily endeavor is to put the mind directly in contact with Krishna through the linking process of devotional service. That's a daily endeavor. You don't just do it once. You do it daily. It's a daily consideration. Now, don't think it's a burden to every day have to make this adjustment. Even in a material relationship, every day you have to put in quality time, you have to discuss, you have to adjust, you have to calibrate. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Oh, really, that's what you really meant? Oh, now I understand. Every day is like that. What happens if you try to put the relationship on automatic pilot? What happens? Those of you who have experience. Keshava, what happens? It crashes, right? The plane crashes. No, you have to every day adjust the sails of the boat. You can't just say, oh, I set the course 10 years ago. So why, for Krishna, can't we every day think about adjusting our course, adjusting the sails, calibrating, reviving, renovating? That shows we care. Bhakti is all about showing Krishna you care. But we're always worried, what about Krishna? Does he care? Meaning, at our unadvanced stage of bhakti, Krishna showing that he cares means he fulfills our material desires. When Krishna does that, I know he really cares for me. He gives me material security, material happiness, and how about a bit of fame and money? And just a bit of sense gratification too. It's all there. If Krishna does that, then, oh glories. I'll come before him. Put a little Lakshmi in the hundi. Offer my pranams. So, once you understand the mind is contaminated, we take up seriously a program of purification. The bodily conception of life causes pain as well as the mental conception of life. If we can master the art of valuing devotional service as our all in all, actually, you end up not living in the material world even while you're here. Once you understand truly that even the best that the material world has to offer can't compare in the slightest to the opulences of bhakti, then you are no longer residing in the material world. You'll understand, for example, the temple is the embassy of Vaikuntha. You'll understand that wherever Krishna's glories are being chanted, that's the spiritual world. This point was discussed by Lord Shiva to Narada Muni. Narada Muni was on the quest for the greatest devotees. And he was appreciating Lord Shiva. Oh, you are non-different from Lord Hari. You are so great. But Lord Shiva was saying, I'm not as great as the residents of Vaikuntha. That's where you should be appreciating. The residents of Vaikuntha, they're always absorbed in chanting Krishna's glories. And then Lord Shiva made a very profound point. He said, it's a mistake to think that the pure devotees in the material world are less than the pure devotees in Vaikuntha. The status of pure devotional service doesn't depend on your location in the spiritual or material world. Why? Because as Krishna himself says, I'm not in the hearts of the yogis. I'm not inside the sun globe. Where am I? Wherever my glories are chanted, that's where I am. So Lord Shiva is explaining this point to Narada Muni. If you want to find super excellence, look for pure devotion. And you cannot distinguish this pure devotion is happening in the material world, this pure devotion is happening in the spiritual world. You can't distinguish like that. Lord Shiva explained further that what is the nature of pure devotion in the material world? It's such that the devotee, even though he or she has a material body, they don't take it seriously. Because you may say, well, how can you consider that pure devotion in the material and spiritual world, the status is the same and you shouldn't exalt those pure devotees in the spiritual world as compared to those in the material world, when we can see that in the material world, devotees have material bodies. So, the point is made by Sanatana Goswami that even if you say a devotee has a material body, the devotee doesn't take the material body seriously. He or she doesn't identify with that body. Another point made in Bhagavatam is that the way a devotee treats his or her body is like someone who's drunk. I don't have that experience, but you can look and see that someone who's drunk, they lose feeling for their body. They don't know where they're at. They even say, I'm wasted, I'm blind. They just stagger around. The worst thing that they can do is get in a car and drive. So many people have been killed by drunken drivers because they're not actually in touch with their existence. So the Bhagavatam says that an advanced devotee is like that. He or she has a material body, but they're not in touch with it as a primary reality. Unless you're clothes conscious, which people are, but unless you're clothes conscious, you don't take your clothes so seriously. They don't dictate your inner consciousness. Your clothing doesn't do that. Similarly, having a material body when engaged in devotional service doesn't dictate the inner consciousness or the inner realities, the inner dynamics of a devotee. So therefore, why would you distinguish between pure devotees in the spiritual and material world when even though those in the material world, they seem to have material bodies, even if that's so, they don't consider it seriously at all. Nor do such devotees consider they own the body. Because as soon as you think you own the body, then you know, it's my property to do with what I like. I'm the enjoyer of this property. But a devotee who's rightly situated understands the body belongs to Krishna. Let me use the body for Krishna's pleasure because Krishna is the proprietor of this body. Even beyond that understanding of proprietorship is love. Let me use this body to serve the beloved. So in that way, Lord Shiva makes the powerful point. You can't distinguish between real devotees in the material world and those in the spiritual world. The whole point is that the glorification of Krishna, that's the important thing. The engagement in Krishna's service. Still, there's a subtle twist to all that. Lord Shiva explains that you may say that, well, what's all the special glory going to Vaikuntha then? Why do we consider Vaikuntha to be superlative and worthy, meritorious of special acclaim if there's no difference between someone properly serving Krishna in the material or spiritual world? So then Lord Shiva does add a point. He said, well, you look at it from another angle. In Vaikuntha, you have the constant association of Krishna's pastimes. So therefore, we give the execution of devotional service in the spiritual world more acclaim, even though actually there's no difference. Because when you're in Vaikuntha, you can see constantly Krishna's loving pastimes. Therefore, we give Vaikuntha a special notice, and we give the devotees who serve in Vaikuntha special notice. At that point, Parvati chimed in. Yes, and especially because the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, is there in Vaikuntha. She's standing up for real women's rights. Yes, Shiva, you have spoken nicely. And furthermore, the reason why Vaikuntha should get special acclaim and devotees who live there should get special acclaim is because of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi. Because actually Parvati is an expansion of Lakshmi Devi. So therefore she was presenting her roots. So in this way, the discussion between Lord Shiva and Narada Muni went on. Just think about Dhruva Maharaj's leaving this world. At the right point in his execution of devotional service, the aircraft from Vaikuntha came to get him. At the right time. That right time is different for everyone. It may be when you're a little child, it may be when you're old, it may be, who knows? It's all the bhakti timetable for your going back to Godhead. It's not dependent on material existence. So Dhruva Maharaj saw the aircraft coming from Vaikuntha. That aircraft cannot be seen with ordinary material vision. It's beyond the scope of mundane science because the Vaikuntha aircraft is not made of matter. It doesn't function according to the laws of matter. So the servants of Vaikuntha piloting that craft, they invited Dhruva, please, come back to Godhead. So how did Dhruva handle the opportunity? While the aircraft is sitting there, visible only to those with spiritual vision, what did Dhruva Maharaj do? He took his morning bath, he did his sadhana, he offered obeisances to all the sages there and took their blessings, and only then did he enter the aircraft. In this way, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, Dhruva Maharaj is showing that even to the time of leaving this world, the devotee does his spiritual duties and shows respect without pride to other devotees. So, our point in discussing this, and Sanatana Goswami's point in bringing it out, is that what happened to Dhruva's body? As soon as he entered the Vaikuntha aircraft, his whole body changed from material to spiritual. It became brilliantly golden and effulgent, meaning that the quality of his body changed. Even before he left the world, right as soon as he stepped up to enter the aircraft, to leave this material world, his material body, which was fully engaged in Krishna's service, became a spiritual body. And of course, As Dhruva stepped up onto the aircraft, suddenly death comes running, death personified. Because death is chasing everyone in this world. You probably don't know what it's like to be pursued by someone. You're walking, you shouldn't do that, but if you're walking late at night in the wrong part of the city, and you look over your shoulder and someone is stalking you and coming after you quick, you'll be terrified. But death is stalking everyone. It's a crime to stalk. Yes. Sometimes men do that to ladies, and ladies can report the person to the police. It's considered a crime. But what about death stalking everyone? Oh, that's okay. Just enjoy while you can. Get some respect in this world and leave some money behind for your children. Doesn't matter that death is stalking. So death was stalking Dhruva, but because Dhruva is absorbed in pure devotion to the Lord, death had to offer its obeisances to Dhruva. Even though death is so terrifying, death personified looks so terrifying that literally you're scared to death to see death personified. Whereas Dhruva, he just stepped on the head of death as death was paying obeisances. He stepped on the head of death personified and entered the Vaikuntha aircraft. So in this way, we should understand that the death of a non-devotee and the death of a devotee, although externally looking the same, they're actually never the same. It's a very deep point. Externally, it will look the same. And sometimes we may get a little discouraged in our spiritual life. Look at such and such senior devotee, gave his life to spreading Krishna consciousness and died in such and such a way. But you're just seeing the externals. You're not seeing the internal dynamics. You can never compare the departure of a devotee with the departure of a non-devotee. You're not able to see Krishna's embrace. Just like the common example given. When the kitten is held in the mouth of the cat, the kitten feels affection. And when the rat is held in the mouth of the cat, the rat feels terror. So for a devotee, death means a time for changing your service. Just like the temple president, he may call you into his office, "Prabhu, we need some help in another department. I know that you like doing this service, but we need some help in that department. Would you kindly change your service?" So you may get a little mental at first. But then, devotional service is devotional service. Similarly, at the time of death, maybe a devotee gets a little mental according to his or her level of spiritual advancement. But then you say, I'll serve Krishna in another way. Of course, an advanced devotee just takes it as Krishna's desire. Whatever my Lord wants, I'll go wherever He wants me to go. My service here is finished, but my devotional service is never finished. So the example of Dhruva is given by Sanatan Goswami to point out further justification for Lord Shiva's statement that devotional service rendered in Vaikuntha or in the material world, you can't distinguish between the devotees who render such service. And therefore look at Dhruva Maharaj. He was still in the material world, but his body became totally spiritualized. Our process of purification starts to proceed very solidly when we understand the contamination of the mind. We have to do something about our mind. In order to be able to deal with the mind, you first have to have a lifestyle that keeps your body out of contamination. If the body is eating foul things, improper things, if the body is engaged in improper activities, sensuality, the body is becoming intoxicated, you'll never be able to get at the mind. You won't even know what the problem is. You'll arrange your whole life just pursuing bodily things. That's pointed out in the next verse. When consciousness is fixed on the material body, home, and other, similar objects of sense gratification, one spends one's life chasing after material objects with the help of the senses. Now just see yourself. Because the body hasn't put itself in a proper lifestyle, you spend your whole life chasing sense objects. That's the story of civilization now. And people think it's so advanced to have billions of people just chasing the sense objects. So therefore, first we have to straighten out the physical situation of the body. We have to change the physical characteristics of the lifestyle. Then after a while you start to become aware. It's my mind that's contaminated. All these realizations come if you simply apply seriously the bhakti technology, the Krishna conscious lifestyle. You'll become aware of what your body is doing wrong. Then you'll become aware what your mind is doing wrong. All levels of awareness come by being in contact with the Krishna sun, rising in your life and dispelling all fog. You don't have to practice mystic yoga. You don't have to practice jnana, metaphysical speculation. All you do is make the adjustment of connecting everything to Krishna. That is the result of real religion. The verse says that when your consciousness is fixed on the personality of Godhead, you achieve religiosity. Religiosity meaning the principles of bhakti. Knowledge meaning knowledge of how Krishna is everywhere. There's never any separation. Detachment means detachment from anything that presents itself as attractive that's not Krishna and Krishna's service. The function of material existence is to always present you a parade of things that are more attractive than Krishna. Like when you go watch a parade and there's no Harinam party in the parade. You just see one float after another, one band after another, each trying to attract you, and you're standing and watching. So material existence is like that. It presents a steady parade of diversions. So detachment means to have no interest in that parade. And in opulence, when the Bhagavatam often uses the word opulence, it's referring to not just cash in the bank or some gems or some gold. It's referring to the yoga cities, the ashta cities, the eight yogic perfections. That is the peak of material opulence. But for a devotee, the yogic perfections, they have no interest. Just like between Kardama Muni and Devahuti in the third canto. Kardama Muni was a Mahayogi, a topmost yogi, but his wife was no slouch. She was a yoga lakshana, fully equipped with the perfections of the Eightfold Yoga system. Still, they both recognize the real opulence is bhakti. So whether you have no money, you have a lot of money, whether you have no mystic power or a lot of mystic power, everyone surrenders to the opulence of bhakti. That's the goal of life.
All right, we'll stop here. And any questions?
Yes. Why we are so afraid of what?
Like losing our false ego.
Because if we lose our false ego, we'll lose us. We're not sure about Krishna. We're not sure about Krishna's service. If we lose the false ego completely, we may disappear. This is impersonalism and voidism, which strongly affects the world. If I let go of my material identity, I'll be nothing. Because we're not sure of our spiritual identity. We're not sure of the spiritual reality. Therefore, we are insecure, and we blame that insecurity on Krishna, when actually the insecurity is coming from contact with material nature. The more you become trusting of Krishna, the more peaceful and secure you'll actually be. It's amazing how we think we can trust the material energy. I don't know about Krishna, but one thing I do know is when I get material security, I'll be all right. It's amazing how we think that way. What kind of energy is present in this world that causes us to overlook all the insecurities and just let us have a feeling that it'll be all right? What's going on? Just a slight disruption in material existence and so much chaos happens. It's like now they have this volcano exploding in Iceland, and way on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean is causing havoc. So much volcanic ash is in the air, planes can't fly, people are stranded, airlines are losing millions of dollars every day. Airports are closed because a volcano all the way under the side of the ocean has erupted and putting volcanic ash in the air. It just shut down air traffic in Europe. Just one little thing like that happens. And we're so proud. We think, oh, we're expert. But nature is showing you. Just one little minor thing. Not even a full volcanic explosion. Just ash in the air. And everyone is just... air traffic is totally disrupted. Businesses are losing millions of dollars a day. Let's see. Oh, but that's over the air. Even if disaster gets close, like the bushfires outside of Melbourne, but that was outside of Melbourne. It wasn't in our part of Victoria. Amazing, this mechanism we have, this psychological mechanism that always says it's going to be all right. I'll be all right in this world. The disasters are for the other people. You know, just last week, you know, half of the top government leaders of Poland disappeared in a plane crash. They were flying to... a spot where during World War II, the Russian army slaughtered 15,000 Polish officers. So survivors or family members and government leaders were on the plane to go commemorate that great disaster. The plane tried to land in heavy rain 3 times and aborted the landing, and then still the pilot didn't get the hint that maybe this is not the best place to land right now. You know, according to the Russians, you know, they radioed the plane, go divert to Moscow, but maybe because they were Polish, they were thinking, well, Moscow wants to go there, you know, those enemies, the Russians. So the plane went to try to land for a 4th time and, you know, just crashed into some trees, and half the top government leaders of Poland are dead. Some people are wondering, how could that happen in this day and age of high technology? The plane tried to land 3 times and aborted and still went at it a 4th time in heavy rain. What's going on? And all the top leaders of the government were on the plane, survivors of the catastrophe that they were coming to commemorate, died on the plane. See how ironic karma is? But it'll be all right. You know, those things happen, but I feel in my body, I feel in my mind that I will be fulfilled in this world. This is our problem. It's a sinister contamination put there by our contact, the mind's contact with the material energy. So when the mind is in contact with the Krishna sun, then all that fog is dispelled. Otherwise, you can't handle it. You'll never get to the root of it. You'll never solve the mystery. The mystery is only solved when there's contact with bhakti. And that contact with bhakti can become so prominent that it makes no difference whether you're a devotee in the material world or in Vaikuntha.
Anything else?
All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.